Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, you're going to hear this.
I'm going to go to the game, so I probably won't see any of the first game. Probably tailgating, doing the whole deal. So it'll be. I'm sad to miss that game, but at the same time, I'm going to the NFC Championship, so I won't be too upset.
You'll also hear this.
I'm cheering for the Broncos, but I have a bad feeling that we're going to be watching the Patriots in the Super Bowl again.
Oh, I know it.
That's not very nice. All right, let's get to the podcast starting right now.
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh, yeah, they were. Hey, everybody, it's Pod Vader here again, and we're heading into the championship weekend, and it's a good weekend because the Patriots are involved, and that always makes me happy. But you know what else makes me happy? It's the fact that once again, we are joined by my good friend, Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you?
What's up, man? Your Patriots are in it again, as usual.
Yes, as usual. And I like saying that, as usual, because it's just fun to say.
After Sunday, I'm just thinking about this. After Sunday, your boy Tom Brady will have played in 20% of the AFC Championship games that have ever been played, ever.
That's a pretty impressive stat. I remembered another one after the game. My son pointed out to me, Tom Brady has played in more AFC Championship games than 27 other franchises.
Wow. He's also thrown more touchdowns in Denver this year than Peyton Manning has.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are a bunch of useless stats for you guys just to whet your appetite. Let me introduce James. He's our Texan super fan. He's joining us today. Hello, James.
Hey, Pod. So I know I'm one of those teams that don't have as many even playoff games as Tom Brady has AFC championship games, but Seattle's out of the playoffs, and that makes me happy.
Well, that's good to hear. So we've got we don't have a lot to get to today. We do have two very big games, and we're going to break those down in depth. We had mentioned last week that the coaching hiring seemed to be going slow, which we didn't know was good or bad or indifferent. And then literally the next day after we recorded, everybody hired everybody. So after we break down the games, we'll talk to M-Dub about who he likes the most and who he thought was a real head scratcher. But really want to dig into these games. By the way, if you want to join us as a super fan, you can do so by emailing us nextfanup@gmail.com. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. Please do so. I've had a few people reach out on Twitter asking for the email address. Even if you've heard a super fan representing your team, I always like to have options and make those super fans feel like they need to get their acts together or else the second guy in a row is going up. So nextfanup@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can check the written previews of all these games. Of course, all these games is only two this week. On Facebook, go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. But we're going to start it off chronologically, and that means it's the AFC Championship. We have another very special guest joining us for this particular superfan battle. Patrick is our Patriots superfan. Monty is going to moderate this for us. He's our Raiders superfan. And I'm pleased to announce that we were joined by Ashley Williams from Her Fantasy Football, filling in as our special guest, Denver Broncos superfan. Take a listen.
Hi, everyone. This is Monty, the Raiders superfan, and today I'm joined by, actually bailed out by Ashley from Her Fantasy Football podcast, who's going to step up and represent the Denver Broncos because I embarrassed myself last week and apparently fired her up enough where she was willing to volunteer her time and represent the Broncos much better than any Raiders fan ever could. Hello, Ashley. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm hanging in there. We're also joined by Patrick, who is our Patriots superfan. Patrick has been representing the Patriots for quite some time now and their reign of terror. So if you haven't heard Patrick by now, you'll probably continue to hear him as we move forward with the super fans, because the Patriots are the evil empire that just won't go away. Hello, Patrick. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Monty. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks both for coming in, and I guess we can just kind of jump right in. Patrick, just wanted to start off with a few questions. How are you feeling about some of the bulletin board material that the media has got the Broncos saying this week? Do you think that's something that's going to fire your team up, or is that just more noise in the background of another championship run?
Yeah, I mean, I think bulletin board material is always published by the press so that they can make themselves feel self-important, to think that they are the ones indirectly that are motivating an NFL football team to do well or to fail, which I think is silly. When you have guys who have been playing football for that long and at that high a level, they're not self-motivating. They're going to wash out of the league pretty fast. You know, but it's also entertaining for the fans. It's great. And, you know, Gronkowski wants to take issue with people wanting to undercut his knees and try and knock him out of a football game again, then I can certainly understand that, but I don't think it's going to influence the way they prepare for the game one way or the other.
Ashley, from where you're at out in Denver, do you have any sense of, like, why are you guys poking the bear? Just keep your mouth shut and focus on the game, or is this all just nothing?
But it's so fun to poke the bear, is it not? I mean, that's the best way to go about it. You know, it's really interesting because I sat there thinking about the whole comments in terms of the fact that they're going to have to tackle him at his knees with Gronk. And the sad thing is, it's kind of the only option now. And you can't, there's literally like a 3-inch window that you could tackle someone and not be considered a complete jerk. So I think, you know, it's kind of poking the bear. It's just, you know, as Patrick said, it's the whole media hype, and as if the media really has anything to do with the preparation that they, that both teams will take to come to this game. They don't, but you know, it's TV. It's what we got to hype up. And, you know, quite honestly, if Chris Harris has any chance of tackling Gronk, he is going to have to go for his knees. So stop giving our strategy away, Chris. Come on.
It's a good point. I just have a feeling that Gronk is going to just hurdle the first person that tries to tackle him at his knee and run into the end zone like a first ballot Hall of Famer. But that's just me. I would probably shut my mouth and go to work. I did want to ask you, Ashley, when Peyton Manning got the nod and was going to be the starter, did you have any feeling of, great, this is the guy, he's been there, done that, they're not going to surprise him, he's going to do all the pre-snap reads? Or are you more like, man, old man time, needs to just sit down and give the kid a chance?
Denver is beyond polarized when it comes right now to the Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler debate. And, you know, Peyton Manning has been my favorite player in the NFL since before he was a Bronco. I was actually an Indianapolis Colts fan as my secondary team because I loved Peyton Manning so much. So when he came to the Broncos, it was, oh my goodness, I can't even explain it, like utopia for me. But I think what it comes down to is that Brock, in my opinion, he didn't play poorly, but he didn't win the spot, in my opinion. And when it comes down to playoffs, I would rather have Peyton Manning than Brock Osweiler in this particular situation. Brock did a great job, and he certainly makes me feel a lot more comfortable for the future seasons to come. But in terms of this season, I do agree that, you know, Peyton Manning gives us the best chance, you know, so I was happy, especially because, you know, that game was looking really bad against the Chargers. And when you've got a future Hall of Famer benched, just sitting there waiting, it certainly causes issues in terms of the crowd and the morale. So yeah, it was definitely interesting. I think it was the right choice at this point in time. I think, you know, you can certainly make an argument otherwise, but you know, I think Peyton Manning has just intangibles that Brock Osweiler does not have at this moment, gives us the best chance to win. With that said, our receivers actually need to start catching the ball, because that would actually help that whole process in terms of winning happen. So talking to you guys, Thomas and Sanders, get it together.
So
as an outsider, I would agree with that. And I was going to say, I bet you that Patrick is also happy that they made the decision to move to Peyton Manning as well. Having faced Peyton Manning in the past when he was at a much higher caliber player,
Patrick, do you have any feeling, hesitation or any nervousness to even face Peyton Manning, or is that kind of the guy you would rather be facing given all the other alternatives?
It's definitely the guy I'd rather be facing at this point, and there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, the first and the obvious one is that he's old, right? So, and very few people have the full faith and confidence in Peyton Manning, including the Denver Broncos, who benched him earlier in the year. And the reason I'd rather face him, yes, you know, we've had a long, you know, history of success against Peyton Manning. And I mean, against Peyton Manning, not against the Indianapolis Colts, against Manning, making Manning look bad. And a lot of that actually has to do with Peyton Manning and his style of play. You know, he's got this reputation of having great mechanics. It's not true. He has horrible mechanics, and he always has. He makes good decisions. He makes great decisions. He's really good about that. You can't take that away from him. And he's still doing that today, theoretically, you know, but you know, what he's bad at is throwing a tight spiral. And that's fine when you're playing in a dome, right? As long as the ball gets to where it's supposed to be and you have good receivers that can adjust to a poorly thrown ball like he always had, then great. You know, as long as you make the right decision, then all things are probably going to work out in your favor. But when you throw those wobbly ducks outside in the wintertime, then the ball is going to be a couple of yards away from where it's supposed to be. And that means two things. It means you can't hit a receiver in stride, right? So if you have a good tackling team, especially with good tackling safeties that aren't going to let people get around them in space, then you're really limiting the passing offense. And the other is that if it's particularly affected by the wind and you have heads up defensive backs or linebackers, then they can make a break on the ball. Right. And that's sort of where we've always played well against Peyton Manning. And that was when he was 28, you know, now that it's later in his career and his arm's not as strong as it was, and it was never really that strong, you know, you're going to see a lot more of those. Where I'm reluctant on that, the last time I checked the weather for Denver, it was supposed to be 41 degrees and like a 5-mile-an-hour wind, you know, which really isn't going to impact the ball that much in either case, as opposed to Foxborough, where it's going to be like 20 degrees in a blizzard with 15-mile-an-hour winds, where that definitely would have played against Manning, you know? So that's where losing that top seed really kind of bugs me.
Fair enough. Ashley, how do you feel that your, you know, top-rated Denver defense, at least regular season as far as yardage goes, whether you care for stats or not, how do you feel they stack up against Tom Brady's offense? I know they're not 100%, but they certainly didn't seem to have any problems with a really good Kansas City defense last week. And just, you know, you feeling any confidence going into this week with your squad?
The Denver defense is a saving grace for our team this year. I think we all can agree on that. The running back play has been spotty. The wide receiver play has been spotty. Quarterbacks, we've been rotating in and out. So if there's something to feel good about the, you know, Denver team, it's certainly the defense. Now, like you said, we aren't full strength, so that is a concern for me. And quite honestly, we're going up a really robust team. You know, I have to be fully honest, I'm very nervous for this game because Gronk is an enormous threat and an incredibly difficult player to take down. Julian Edelman is maybe one of the most underrated players in the NFL, in my opinion. And he is such a good route runner and he can be used in so many different facets in the game. And Bill Belichick is a mastermind and is able to pick apart any defense and know exactly how he needs to play a certain player. And I think we're going to see a lot of that out of Julian Edelman. You know, in my ideal world, they would throw all their balls to Brian LaFell because he's, you know, Mr. Dropsy and can only seem to catch half of his passes, but that's not going to be the case. So I am nervous. I'm very confident with our line. I feel like we'll be able to apply some pressure to Brady, and our secondary is fantastic. So I think it's a really good matchup. Where I think the tables will be turned in this possible situation is if we're able to have a run game, because the run game has not exactly been as stout for the Patriots. They only had like 38 total rushing yards last game. Not that the Broncos were a whole lot better. I think we had 100, but if we're able to get, you know, solidify a solid running game, that I think we've got a shot in this case. And I think we'll be able to definitely stop the run. And it's just going to come down to our secondary stepping up and really honing in on Gronk and Edelman. I'm comfortable leaving the other guys to kind of do their thing.
See, and that's the trick. And that's where the Patriots offense really fires on all cylinders. So when you have your tight end and your slot receiver that are the best, you know, offensive weapons on the team, that really forces you into bracket coverage on one, if not both of them. And if you just bracket one, then the other guys can get open on an option route and Brady's going to hit them right away. If you try and bracket both, now you don't have a pass rush anymore because you're not blitzing anybody, right? So having both of those guys on the field at the same time is really that is the key to the whole offense. So best offensive game plan for the Broncos might be to try and take someone's knees out.
Absolutely. Let's just completely leave Brandon LaFell entirely open. That's my game plan.
Yeah.
I plan on letting Kubiak know that.
You should re-sign Romanowski for this game.
Oh, I could only wish. I love Romo.
Oh, that's terrible.
Laugh from the past. In people's face, Romanowski. Gross. I love it. Love him.
Patrick, one other thing. So, I think you had mentioned this is the fifth straight year the Patriots have gone to the championship game. But with the talent of Brandon LaFell and Steven Jackson, this isn't exactly the most loaded team that the Patriots have had recently. I think Jared Mayo got injured last week. He's lost offensive
line on IR
throughout the course of the year.
He's out.
So I think the real question is, how do you foresee Belichick cheating this year to try to get to another Super Bowl?
Great question.
Unbelievable the reputation that man has for one benign little offense of having a camera in the wrong position and not having a break, which is the actual penalty that he was charged for. Was this like 8 years ago? But okay, let's put it on his tombstone, I guess. So I think I already mentioned the offensive game plan, which is, you've got two stud receiving options, and your outside pass threat, if you want to call him that, and Brandon LaFell. Last year he was actually a really integral part of the offense. He was the guy that we would look for when those other two were double covered, and then you just hit LaFell for 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards, and for whatever reason now they have him hanging out at the line of scrimmage. So when he gets 3 yards or 3 catches, he only nets 6 yards, which is just kind of stupid. And then they're missing the outlet receiver coming out of the backfield, sort of, because Steven Jackson, the ghost of Steven Jackson, is not particularly good anymore, which is not a great surprise to anybody. James White actually is. He is really good. So my hope is that the last couple of weeks they've just been running Steven Jackson because they could, in hopes that their opponents will fixate on Steven Jackson and how terrible the run game is so that they can bring in James White to catch the balls out of the backfield and, get 20, 40, 60 yard plays out of him when need be, because then he becomes your other offensive weapon after the other two. And that I think is plenty. If we're negating the pass rush and we're picking them apart with those three guys, then I think we're going to be in good shape offensively. Defensively, I just look for zone coverage and a bunch of guys with their eyes up in the sky waiting for a ball to hit them in the hands, because I think it's going to happen.
Ashley, I think Patrick makes a great point. It does kind of, Tom Brady, say he's the greatest quarterback of all time or one of, but if you give him all day to stand in the backfield, he's going to pick you apart. So does this Denver Broncos defensive pass rush have enough to get to him and make him move and shake him up a little bit, or is this just going to be another epic Peyton Manning playoff failure that we've all kind of come so accustomed to over the years?
Oh, they're the best.
We've got a really good pass rush, so I feel confident they're going to be able to get to Brady. And what my favorite thing is, we've got two of the most immobile quarterbacks in the NFL in this game. It is crazy. You look at Brady and you would think that this guy would be able to run. And both him and Peyton are just, they're awful. My dream would be to see these two guys go head to head in a 40-yard dash, just so we could all be like, what just happened? Yeah, I think we can. I think we'll be able to do that. I am a little afraid of the dump to James White, because I do agree that James White is a superior player to Steven Jackson. So I think we're going to have to certainly not come full blitz all the time. We're going to need to be able to make sure that we're able to cover the dump. But, I think we can get to Brady. I think that is going to be an option. I'm not too worried about the defense. I am nervous a little about turnovers. And again, we got to get our rush established. And certainly our receivers need to start catching the balls out of the backfield as well, because, as Patrick pointed out, the deep ball is not exactly Peyton's forte these days or ever. So that needs to be established. But I think we can. I think we can get to Brady. And we are also forgetting the fact that this is in Denver. And it is a far different game. You know, when we go to Foxborough, I basically don't even, like, watch the game. It's like, we're going to lose this game. We lose every single time we go there. But it's a different beast in Denver. You know, the record is in, you know, the Denver's favor when they're here.
That's true, well, especially if you go all the way back to the big Clover days.
In a perfect Denver scenario, what is your prediction for the game? You got a final score. How do you think it's going to end up? And if everything goes your way?
I would say 27-24.
Close
Broncos,
game, high
everything
scoring,
goes
good
my
weather.
Way. I do. I think it's going to shoot out.
Into that, what do you got for a count?
I'm not far off. I mean, that's not – the Patriots don't blow doors off. That's just not the style of play that they have. So I'll go Patriots 31, Denver 27. That's probably more points than I think they'll really get, which means they'll probably score 27 points.
Well, I think both of these teams are phenomenal. And just as a fan of sports, I think it'll be fun to watch Peyton Manning versus Brady one last time when it's, you know, more probably apt to say Tom Brady versus the Denver defense and Belichick versus Peyton Manning. But either way, it should be a lot of fun. Appreciate you guys taking the time to talk us through some of the things to watch for the game, and, you know, have fun and enjoy the games this weekend.
Thank you so much.
All right, M-Dub, there was Ashley. Thanks again to her. Listen to her podcast, Her Fantasy Football. It's fantastic. She does it with her sisters. And Patrick, breaking down the Patriots-Broncos game. I mean, this is Brady Manning 17, 18. I don't even remember how many this is. Is there anything new to be watching for between these two quarterbacks?
Oh, plenty. I mean, I think the best thing to look at is that's not the matchup to look at anymore. I mean, it's not an even fight between the two quarterbacks. They're not even close. I mean, Brady's still at the peak of his powers. He's still an elite player where, you know, I think Manning last week probably played his best game of the season, but that's not saying much. You know, I mean, it says volumes that was his best game of the season. He didn't throw an interception, and, you know, he moved the football reasonably well, and that's about as good as you're going to get with the guy.
Which matchup are you watching in particular? Are you watching the defense versus the offense? What I'm thinking of the Broncos defense versus the Patriots offense. Which one do you like the most?
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about the Denver defense, and I think the shortcut is, boy, that's the best defense in the league. They're unbelievable. And they were. I mean, the first half of the season, they were historically good. And lately, they've just been very good. You know, I mean, I don't think that the Broncos defense is light years better than the Patriots defense. And with Chris Harris's injury, that's a big deal, especially in this matchup, because if he were right, and last week he only played in sub-packages, Roby basically is a starter, who knows how much he'll play this week. If he were right, I think he would man up on Edelman, which is a huge, huge key to Patriots offense. They're undefeated when Edelman plays for them. But without him, they struggle. I mean, he is a huge key for their offense. And I think Harris would do a reasonably good job against him. But if he's only going to play half the time or whatever, all of a sudden, all the matchups start to crumble. I mean, if Roby's on him and the Steelers picked on Roby, he's a good young player, but he's not there yet. You know, what do you do with Talib? Is he outside on LaFell? You try to match him up with Gronk. Of course, there's no matchup for Gronk. And I think that Brady's going to find matchup after matchup, including to the running back, you know, to White, that he has an up-tempo approach, gets the ball out of his hand super fast, pass rush doesn't get to him, and he picks those guys apart and spreads the field, you know, horizontally, makes them run like crazy, wears them out in that high altitude. And then it wouldn't shock me if they have a lead in the fourth quarter, big old Steven Jackson comes out, you know, takes the coat off and comes in with fresh legs and pounds them into the ground and runs for 40 or 50 yards in the fourth quarter.
James, these are two teams that have met plenty of times before, but they did meet earlier this season. The Broncos won that game in overtime with Brock Osweiler at the helm. What are you looking for in this matchup?
Well, I'm really fascinated in how the Denver running game is going to do against the Patriots. I know there's the stats out there, you know, when teams get a 100-yard rusher, they're more likely to win, and how that's kind of a recursive stat because typically teams that are running the ball at the end of the game will accumulate those yards. There's a stat out there that looks at expected win percentage. And so basically it factors in how the game flow and how important an individual rush is. And the New England Patriots are 0-4 when the opposing team is able to add value through their running game. And if they take away an opposing team's running game, basically the opposing team can't add any win expectancy, they're 13-0. Denver has a good running game. Obviously, Manning is not who Manning used to be. If you look at their DVOA, the Denver Broncos offense is down by like the New York Giants and the Miami Dolphins. So it's definitely going to rely on the Denver defense to keep them in the game, hopefully force Tom Brady to make a couple mistakes. But as he demonstrated against Kansas City last week, just because you have big pass rushers doesn't mean that it's even going to impact their passing game all that much. Denver is slightly better than Kansas City as far as getting to the quarterback, at least according to the DVOA and sack rate, but it's not significantly better. And so it could be a very long day for Denver.
You know, M-Dub, the running game is an interesting one for Denver. You can go back and look at that Chiefs game where Peyton came back in and the running game seemed to improve with the admission of Peyton Manning. How will that affect this game coming up?
Yeah, and James mentioned it, and I just wanted to kind of piggyback off that. I think that's a huge key to the game. And, you know, one thing I think that Manning makes a difference with is when he comes to the line of scrimmage, he's going to audible to the run at the correct time, where Osweiler may not have. You know, and that's a hard thing for me to guess, you know, as I'm sitting there watching live. But you know he's going to make the right checks and, you know, reads at the line. But I'm thinking about it from Belichick's perspective. And if I'm Belichick, I'm going to take the run away. And if that means I give up a big play here and there to Sanders or Thomas, they really don't have a third receiver. They don't have a tight end. That I want to get this offense off the field. I don't want them to run, where I think Denver's going to say, we want to win this game 13-10. We want to keep Brady on the sidelines as much as we can. And their offensive line is bad. I mean, it's just flat is, especially in protection. But as the season's gone along, I think they've gotten accustomed more and more to the Kubiak zone blocking, all move as one, dancing bears type offense, and they're getting better at it. I also think C.J. Anderson is healthier than he's been and is clearly their best back, and he's the best that he's been throughout the season too. So their running game is improving, but my hunch is Belichick tries to take that away, where last week was interesting because I don't know if you noticed, but whenever the Chiefs were in their base personnel, when they had 12 personnel or 21 personnel, Belichick went to big nickel. He had three safeties and two corners. Where this week, you know, because he trusts Chung so much, Chung's so good near the line of scrimmage, this week, if he does that, Denver's just going to run every time, I think, which I think is exactly what Belichick doesn't want. So that brings me back to the Collins injury. Is Collins and Hightower, are they healthy enough that he doesn't have to play big nickel on base downs? And I'm also curious about the Chandler Jones injury. I mean, I think all those guys will play. You're probably on top of it more than I am. But that's a key because I think he's going to want bigger personnel in the game and beg Manning to throw as much as he possibly can. He wants Manning to come to the line audible to a pass. And I think if he has the right personnel in the game, he can make that happen. But I also think that the New England corners can do a reasonably good job against Thomas and Sanders and put McCourty over the top.
So let's talk about those linebacker injuries there. Jamie Collins has some sort of stomach thing. He's listed as questionable. Hightower, I don't see Hightower on the injury report, but I know Hightower's been banged up all year pretty much. And Chandler Jones left the game last week.
Plus
late
the Patriots
the
line sheet.
Well, it's funny when you look at the injury report, all the Patriot players are listed as questionable. The Broncos players are listed as probable. Gerard Mayo, of course, was put on injured reserve. It's slightly bothersome, but since he was playing as the fourth linebacker in the lineup anyway, wasn't really playing every down like he used to. I mean, Gerard Mayo is just not the linebacker he once was when he first started in the league. It is a concern. I think the running game, you know, I thought the Patriots would do a little bit better against the run than they actually did last week. You know, ultimately it didn't come back to haunt them, but, you know, the Chiefs were able to run fairly easily on the Patriots. At least I thought
that was
the case.
Part of that's because they did have the lighter personnel in there. They had five defensive backs against base personnel. So you would expect them to kind of concede something in the run that Kansas City can.
Well, but if all these injuries are true, let's start with that hypothetical. If these injuries are true, there are no other linebackers on the Patriots that can that could be subbed in anyway. And so it would make more sense to play with those better safeties, in my opinion, than it would be with an off the street linebacker. Now, if these injuries aren't true, and they most likely aren't, I suspect all of these guys are playing, with the exception of Jerod Mayo, who's on injured reserve. Again, I see it as worrisome. And if I'm going to tip my hat, first of all, I'll tell you right now, I'm picking the Patriots. I don't think that was ever in question. But if I am going to tip my hat in any way towards where the Broncos have an advantage, it is there. I think their run game can be a problem for the Patriots. The only problem with that is I still don't know if Peyton Manning and Gary Kubiak are necessarily on the same page. What do you think of that, M-Dub?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the same page. It's pretty general.
Well, they didn't seem to mesh. I mean, early on in the season, it seemed like Peyton's style wasn't meshing with Gary Kubiak's style. And I don't necessarily know if all, even though it's been a whole season, I don't necessarily know if there's been a come to Jesus there yet.
Well, listen to this one. You know, and basically, I very much agree with you. I mean, I think that was a round peg square hole situation. And Elway hired Kubiak because he's thinking of next year with Osweiler most likely, and you know, grabbed Kubiak while he could, his buddy, before you know, somebody else scooped him up, thinking big picture, knowing that it's not a good fit with Manning. But anyways, you know, Manning wants to be in the shotgun, he wants to throw it, and he wants to run runs out of the shotgun, where Kubiak wants to do it from behind, you know, from a typical position behind center. But last week, the numbers are staggering that when Manning lined up behind center, he basically handed the ball off almost every time. When he was in shotgun, he basically threw every time. It was a huge tell.
All right. So, James, you have a plan coming up in the next 2 weeks to do a special gambling edition of Next Fan Up, talking about the Super Bowl prop bets. I will give you the number fire number on this game as soon as I find it. Ah, yes. Number fire loves Denver +3 at 61.9%. James, who do you got in this one?
Well, I mean, the number there is basically out of respect for Mile High Stadium, I think. You know, Brady's come in. He's only 2-6 in Denver in his career, 2-2 against Manning in the playoffs. I don't think that the Denver defense is as dominant as it will need to be, and that the Patriots are going to make yet another trip to the Super Bowl, probably somewhere around the neighborhood of 21-17.
M-Dub, who do you got?
Yeah, I got New England even bigger, I think. You know, 27-13, something in that neighborhood. I just think that this is a bad matchup for Denver. I think New England's clearly the better football team.
I would agree. I'm not going to go in all confident. Usually when I do that, I get burnt. And I'm not saying I'm not going into it all confident, because I'm not. I'm just saying Patriots have played the Broncos already this year. Yes, it was with Brock Osweiler, not with Peyton Manning. Yes, they did in fact lose, and yes, they did lose in Mile High Stadium. It's rare to see Belichick play the same game plan twice, and it's rare to see Belichick lose that second time around. So I'm going with the Patriots. I feel good about it. I don't have any locks at all this week. Because as we are about to move on now to the NFC Championship game between the Arizona Cardinals and the Carolina Panthers, I think these two teams are fairly evenly matched. And we're going to talk about that right now with Drew Brooks, who's representing the Arizona Cardinals, and Jimmy Six, who is our Panthers super fan. Well, he kind of called it last week. The man we take out of the mothballs to cover the Arizona Cardinals for us, Drew Brooks, said we'd be hearing from him again. And lo and behold, here he is, his team in the NFC Championship game. Drew Brooks is here representing the Arizona Cardinals. Hello, Drew.
Yo, wasn't as easy as I thought it would be, but I'll tell you this. And you can believe me or you don't have to believe me. I don't really care. But as soon as the Packers didn't go for two at the end of regulation, I knew the Cardinals were going to win. Coin flip, not coin flip, does it flip, didn't matter. I just had this feeling. So I'm happy to be here. Hopefully there will be another one. So I'm definitely not predicting that.
And Jimmy Six, he's been with us all season long. He is the Carolina Panthers superfan. Hello, Jimmy. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? See, I'm hoping this podcast is kind of like how Carolina games have been all season. I just got to show up for the first half, and then I'll disappear for the second half.
No, I like that.
I mean, both of you guys had interesting games. Let's start with you, Drew. You mentioned that you had a feeling that when they didn't go for two, you were winning the game. I almost wish like we had Brian back again to talk about the Packers, because I don't know if there's any other team, and I'm sure ESPN Stats and Info has got this stat somewhere. I don't know if there's any other team that has had more success with the Hail Mary than Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers.
No, but you know what's even crazier is the amount of times that the Packers have lost on the last possession of a playoff game. I think that number is 5 now with Rodgers and McCarthy. It's just, honestly, it's crazy. I mean, and even crazier than the Hail Mary was the 4th-and-20 play. That game was just nutty. It was a crazy 10-minute finale that ended with Larry Fitzgerald being a legend. But yeah, I mean, listen, Aaron Rodgers as a cannon, I don't necessarily agree with the, oh, we played a win mentality that Arians is showing. Like, I personally think blitzing 7 guys, they hadn't blitzed 7 guys the entire game. Not once the entire game did they blitz 7 guys. And then all of a sudden they're sending 7 guys on the last play. But I mean, you know, to Betcher's credit, maybe it was on accident. But he had 2 guys on the ball. I mean, Patrick Peterson was one of them. There were 2 guys on the ball. The Packers just made the play. And Rodgers is a cannon. You know, it's funny. I'm going to tell a story I probably shouldn't tell. I was having a conversation with Brock Heward, who was on campus today at ESPN. And he was telling me that one of his former wide receiver friends was in training camp one day, and he was with a quarterback that couldn't really throw, and this guy had like 4.4 speed. So he was running down, you know, straight down the field. And this quarterback pulled him aside afterwards, and he's like, listen, he was like, you can run these routes as great as you want. You can, you know, you can be the fastest guy in the world, but I can only throw the ball 38 yards, right? So you can get to 38 yards in 1.7 seconds, or it could take you 7 seconds to get to 38 yards. But this ball is only going 38 yards. Like, that's not a problem for Aaron Rodgers. The dude's got a cannon. Like, he could, I feel like he could hit the end zone from anywhere on the field, and he just gives his guys an opportunity to make the play, and they did.
By the way, my 12-year-old son can throw 38 yards. That's pretty pathetic, Brock Heward. You can only throw 38 yards.
No. Brock wasn't throwing 38 yards. The quarterback
for
this team that is putting their son could only throw 38 yards. Brock had a cannon.
Don't try and cover up for him.
Nice guy. I wasn't him.
By the way, speaking of my 12-year-old son, there were 2 plays this weekend that we saw in playoff games that we have as established plays in our own playbook. One of them was the hook and go that was run perfectly by Gronk, Brady throwing the hook pump fake and then the touchdown to Gronk. The second one was the pitch to Fitzgerald for the game-winning touchdown. That play is money in flag football, my friend.
Well, so here's the thing. And Jimmy, isn't it funny that, like, we're talking NFC Championship game and Jake still finds an opportunity to get the Patriots in? But the thing about Fitzgerald and what I like about Bruce Arians is they made a conservative effort to get him the ball in the second half of the Packer game. And I expect him to be part of the game plan against Carolina, too. But he's a 1 catch in the first half, and all of a sudden he just torches that defense later on. You got to get these guys involved. And even that stupid second down throw, which I didn't like, was to Larry Fitzgerald. You know, he runs 70-something yards to get it down inside the 5-yard line. The first play is to Larry Fitzgerald, and then they run that boot to Fitzgerald. Like, I like it when my coach is getting the ball in my best player's hands, and that's what Bruce Arians does. Obviously, you mentioned Gronk and Brady. I mean, Brady, Edelman, Gronk is going to do that too. You know, my concern moving forward for the Carolina Panthers is, like, do they have that guy, or is that just Cam Newton? because I don't know who they're going to throw the ball to other than Greg Olsen.
It's going to be interesting. Jimmy, let's talk about your interesting path here. I had mentioned to my 12-year-old son watching the first half of that game about the amazing Bills comeback against the Houston Oilers way back in the day. And we left at halftime to go do other things as we were on vacation in the sunny state of Florida. And lo and behold, here came the Seahawks. So what happened?
You know, everyone's been making such a big deal about these second half collapses in the games. And quite frankly, I'm not overly concerned about it. I think it's a combination of Carolina's been able to get up big in the first half and then coming out in the second half. I definitely think they take their foot off the pedal. I think most teams just naturally would, but also I think they come out into the second half thinking we don't need to make many adjustments. Everything went perfect in the first half. So that being said, they're not making many adjustments, and the opposing team are making every adjustment possible. I just think it's a formula to lose that lead in the second half. So I'm not too concerned about that, because I don't expect the game against Arizona to be a first half blowout and then a second half collapse. I think both teams will be in the game the entire way, and I think it'll keep both teams focused. Even potentially a game in the Super Bowl, you're not going to blow a team out in the first half. So it was a weird game. Everything that could go right in the first half went right. It was just amazing how we came out, and Jonathan Stewart just ripped it off the first play of the game right down to the 5-yard line, and we couldn't have set the tone any better. And the next play, when Seattle's on offense, we get a pick six by just getting pressure to Russell Wilson. And I think that's going to be one of the keys to the upcoming game, is whether or not we're going to be able to apply any pressure to Carson Palmer. We did lose Jared Allen to a broken foot. They're saying he's still questionable, but I mean, there's just no way. How are you going to play with a broken foot? So we're down a man. Not saying that Jared Allen was the Jared Allen of old, but he at least was a body doing something out there. We just lost another body there. So I think our pass rush, which has been our weakness throughout the second half of the season, is really going to be tested against Arizona with all those weapons. They're going to get the ball out, and if we don't get any pressure on Carson Palmer, our secondary will be exposed with Cortland Finnegan and Robert McClain as our other corners out there. That I can't believe they're even on the field, but we got to get to Carson Palmer if we want any chance in this game.
Now, Jimmy, we had mentioned last week with M-Dub, and he's coming up again here in just a few moments when we're finished, that the matchup against the Seahawks, that we probably hadn't seen two teams that were more alike than the Seattle Seahawks and the Carolina Panthers. But lo and behold, we may have forgotten about the Arizona Cardinals, because, I mean, I think the Cardinals and the Panthers have a lot of similarities going for it, going into it as well.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone knows who Carson Palmer is going to be throwing the ball to. It's going to be Larry Fitz, Michael Floyd, John Brown, the other Brown, and David Johnson has emerged as that lead back. So they have those main weapons, those fantasy football weapons that everyone has on their team. And when you look at Carolina, you kind of like what Drew said, who the heck is Cam Newton throwing the ball to? But it's been the same story the entire season. It's not like we lost Kelvin Benjamin in the middle of the season. We lost him from the beginning to get-go. So he's been thrown to the same cast of characters the whole season. And just the formula of getting the ball out quick, getting some protection on Cam, and when he can run and just pose that threat as a runner, especially early on in the season, he didn't run too much with his legs. He it was just that threat that he can run. And as the season has worn on, he definitely has taken his chances running the ball. So I think the team is very similarly built, just without those fancy names like a Larry Fitzgerald. Ted Ginn is back on the field last week. And I think another name that just the kind of person that replaced Steve Smith, the quiet leader, the wide receiver core that hasn't gotten any mention, is Jericho Cotchery. Almost every single one of his catches have been on third down, on a third down conversion. And he's just been that leader at the wide receiver core. So I definitely think we are similarly built when it comes to the offensive side. You may not think it when you think of the Arizona Cardinals, all those wide receivers that you have in the fantasy team. But Carolina, they have their weapons, and they've used them, and nothing's changed since week one all the way to now. And then when you look at the defensive side of the ball, both teams are littered with stars on defense. I think it'll be very interesting to see where Josh Norman pairs up with. I don't think just from where you're on, I don't think he's going to be paired up with Larry Fitz. Sounds like he's going to be sticking with Michael Floyd most of the game. But at the same time, we don't have that second corner to match up with Larry Fitz, so I think we might run a lot of zone. I don't think Josh Norman may stick with a single specific person. But then when you look at Patrick Peterson, who's he going to take away? Is it taking away Ted Ginn or Jericho Cocker or Devin Funchess? None of those names are going to scare you. So it'll be interesting to see where they prepare Patrick Peterson. I don't think they're going to use him as a spy on a Greg Olsen. I don't think that's their formula. I think they're going to keep Patrick Peterson on the outside somewhere. But it's going to be very interesting from the defensive side of the ball. I'd like to see what kind of pressure they do get on Cam, and Cam can get around the those attacking linebackers like the Dwight Freeney's who are coming out of nowhere. See if he can get around them and get a couple yards with the legs. So I think that's going to be key to Carolina keeping the ball moving down the field. Get those 4 to 6 yard gains with Cam Newton at random. I think that'll be greatly helped.
Drew, how do you see the matchups? What's the X factor here for the Cardinals?
Well, they need to run the football. I mean, I disagree that the offenses are built similarly. But the Cardinals, I think the number is pathetic. It's either 37, 37 and a half, or 38. That's how much they've averaged rushing the ball in the last two games. One of those was that week 17 shellacking by the Seahawks, and obviously last week against the Packers. But they need to run the football. They need to establish this dual threat because what makes David Johnson so special out of the backfield is, you know, the defenses have to line up in the box, and then all of a sudden he's one-on-one against the linebacker. But if you're not worried about the run, I mean, you can kind of sit back and you can play dime or you can play nickel. To me, what makes the Cardinals' defense intriguing to me is, number one, I mean, you have a small inside linebacker, so stopping the run up the middle is going to be difficult. If Cam wants to start running the ball over the place, he probably can. But, Patrick Peterson is going to blanket one side. Aaron Rodgers didn't throw to James Jones. And what Patrick Peterson does, I mean, Ted Ginn, it doesn't really matter. I'd rather have him against a guy like Ted Ginn where you know he's not going to make any big plays. Because, the one thing, I watched the Panthers from afar this year, but the one thing I really enjoyed about their offense is that Cam took chances down the field. If Patrick can shut down half the field, then you really only need to worry about Greg Olsen, and hopefully the Cardinals' pass rush can get to him. I think Jared Allen is a big factor. I saw that when Jared Allen is on the field, the Panthers give up a whole yard less per play than they do when he's off of it. Now, that also factors into the beginning of the season when he wasn't there yet. But I think the Panthers' pass, if Carson Palmer has time, he's going to pick apart this defense, Josh Norman or not. If the Panthers' pass rush is on point, then it's going to be tough for the Cardinals to be able to move the football, especially since they can't run.
Here's a useless stat for everyone. It's one that was noted early on after these games were won last weekend. Arizona quarterback Carson Palmer faces off against Carolina quarterback Cam Newton. Palmer won the Heisman Trophy in 2002. Newton won the award in 2010 and is the first pair of Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks in NFL history to start against each other in the playoffs. That's pretty amazing that it's the first time this has ever happened. But let's talk a little bit about Carson Palmer. I mean, this is almost uncharted territory for the man, Drew.
Yeah, I mean, he won his first playoff game. It's pretty embarrassing. I mean, honestly, he was pretty pathetic last week. Very jittery in the first half. Didn't really understand what was going on. Didn't move the football at all. Threw a lot of bad passes. So here's the thing. In the fourth quarter, when the Cardinals needed to score, Carson Palmer leads him down the drive. He goes 7 for 10. But that touchdown pass was deflected, and it was really lucky. I just think that the mistakes are there for Carson. You know, what's funny is that we had John Gruden on Mike and Mike this morning, and he tells me he's watching tape of Palmer, and he's just in love with the guy. I love the guy. I love the guy. I love the guy. It's just I watch every play, and I see a lot of mistakes. I see a lot of bad throws and a lot of bad decisions. If the Cardinals get lucky, they can still win the football game. There's a lot of pressure on Carson Palmer still, to me, in my opinion, just because he still only won one playoff game in his career.
And Jimmy, we're talking about Cam Newton, a younger quarterback, who's also sort of in uncharted territory here.
Oh yeah, he's. This is our first time getting this far. In the previous years, we lost in the NFC Divisional Championship, but this team has been growing as a whole, and I think that was kind of part of Dave Gettleman's philosophy when he got rid of the likes of Danger Williams and Steve Smith earlier in his tenure. You're wondering why is he getting rid of these guys who've been here, and I think he wants these guys, the Cam Newtons, the Luke Kuechlys, he wants these guys to grow and develop this team and build that new expectation, and they have thus far. This is a whole new territory for almost the entire team. I was looking at the 2003 roster of the Carolina Panthers when they went to the Super Bowl, and only two players are left on that roster that are still in the league, as Steve Smith and Julius Peppers. And then we have three players on the active roster who've been in the Super Bowl, including Ed Dixon, and the other two names are escaping me right now. So we don't have that deep playoff experience per se, but this team is a young, hungry team. And I think with our minimal or third consecutive year in the playoffs, I think we are more mature. We know what we need to do as far as taking care of business. But it would not surprise me if they came out a little jittery, nervous, trying to maybe over-amped. But I think they'll settle down. I think they realize this could be their year, especially the way Cam's playing. His confidence level can't be any higher, and it just shows on this field. So I think he's going to do well in this situation. He has done it at almost every level of football. And I think he's starting to feel that this is his time to show the football world that he can do it at the NFL level now.
Drew, is the window closed on the Cardinals if they don't make it to the Super Bowl this year?
No, I think that's honestly the silliest thing I've ever heard. It just depends on if you get good quarterback play. Carson or anybody else. I mean, this defense is legit, man. Like, they're still young. They're still good. Like, I don't think that changes. I mean, I worry about Seattle a little bit moving forward, but the NFL is so week to week. Like, who cares?
It wasn't meant to be a silly question to slap you in the face. It was meant more as are there any players that you're worried about not being on the team next year if they don't make it to the Super Bowl this year? Clearly, if it's the same team, I would tend to believe that they're going to be...
The Fitzgerald contract was an issue before, but that's no longer an issue. They're going to make it work. Obviously, he's a big part of this team. I mean, you lost a defensive coordinator, and Betcher was still fine. Steve Keim, and Steve Keim I trust. I mean, he hasn't done anything wrong, really, since he's been here. I mean, maybe drafting Jonathan Cooper didn't really work out, but they bring in IU Potty. Like, there's a lot to like.
And obviously, Jimmy, you still have a young team. You're looking at a wide receiver prospect that should help out on the offensive side for the Panthers if they don't make the Super Bowl. What is this team going to be like if they lose this game?
I think if we lose this game, it'll be a disappointment considering we almost went perfect in the regular season. But when you entering the season, if you ask anybody on that team if they would be in the NFC Championship game, I think they were all honest, I think they would all tell you no, there's no chance, it's just not happening this year. But I think opening year, week one, we were 30-1 Vegas odds to get into the Super Bowl. So obviously, I think a lot of people thought this was a year to rebuild, or not rebuild per se, but to take time to build that step. So considering how the regular season went, I think it would be a disappointment not to make the Super Bowl, but in the grand scheme of things, this has been an outstanding season, and the way Cam has played and played at MVP level. Next year, we expect Kelvin Benjamin to be full go, Devin Funchess in his second year, and then just be ready to add more weapons to that offense. The arrow is definitely pointing up as long as Cam Newton is healthy and ready to roll. But it's been an awesome year. I don't think if you tell every Carolina Panther fan you go 15-1 and lose in the NFC Championship, I don't think people would be upset with that. It's been an outstanding year, but I think it would be a minor disappointment if we do lose this game because of just how well the regular season has gone. So I expect us to keep on moving and get on to the Super Bowl.
Drew, prediction?
I'm actually predicting that the Panthers are going to win just because they're playing at home. I would take the Cardinals if they're playing at home.
I think that this is Carolina's year, man. And I'm happy for Cam. I'm happy for Riverboat Ron. It's a good team. They've drafted really well. Luke Kuechly's awesome. Like, they have a lot of really good players that I like. So as long as they end up beating the AFC, I'm okay with it.
Well, that's not going to happen. All right, Jimmy, who you got?
I'm going to take Carolina at home. I think it's going to be a relatively high-scoring game, maybe 31-28, 34-28, in that range. I think things will be a little slow to get going, but as the kind of second half starts, I think there's going to be a lot of fireworks, a lot of points starting to score as the teams wear out. And I think it's just if Carolina could take advantage of one or two of those Carson Palmer throws, I think that'll be just enough to turn the tables our way.
All right, gentlemen, we will be in touch for the next couple of weeks to see which one of you will be facing off against me and Patrick in the Super Bowl. Oh, I'm sorry. I've jumped the gun and already put the Patriots in the Super Bowl. How dare I? Drew, thanks for joining us. Jimmy, thanks a lot.
See you guys.
R&M Dub. So we heard Drew and Jimmy. Drew, it's funny. Ashley doesn't feel all that confident about the Broncos. And as a matter of fact, I believe she even picks the Patriots. Drew flat out says it's going to be the Panthers. He doesn't believe in the Cardinals. I actually kind of like the Cardinals here. If anything, I'm leaning towards the Panthers because of home field and no other real reason. Is there a reason to get behind the Cardinals in this game?
Yeah, there is. I'm going to take the Panthers, but I think it's going to be a close one. And in a way, both these teams have sort of left a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth. You know, I mean, Carolina didn't finish the season very strong. They were awesome in the first half last week, but second half, they got whipped. It wasn't like they just laid down. I mean, Seattle kicked the crap out of them. I mean, that was not a competitive half either. And you look at Arizona, you know, they got whipped in week 17. I didn't think they were very impressive last week. And all year, you know, we did the power rankings on the old podcast. I basically had Arizona first all year, and Panther fans were mad at me and whatever. But I thought the Cardinals were the best team in the league, and they haven't played like it the last 2 weeks. And Palmer has, I don't know if it's a broken finger, but he has some sort of finger issue. I think that's affecting them quite a bit. But I also think the Cardinals have the best matchup in this game that favors them, and that's their receivers against the Panthers secondary. I mean, Josh Norman's a great player, but he can't guard Floyd, Brown, and Larry. You know, the rest of that secondary is not so great. You know, they got a lot of injuries at corner. Their safeties are average players. Can they protect long enough to attack that? We'll see. You know, Jared Allen's probably not going to play. He's been playing really well for them. You know, that interior pass rush is probably going to cause problems. So that's key to me. Can Palmer capitalize on that, and can they protect? Because I think the receivers will consistently get open. And then the other matchup to really watch is Carolina's running game. And I think they have the best running game in the league, and that includes, you know, Cam Newton runs, designed runs, of course. But if you look last week, you know, I think the average fan says, wow, Carolina just ran all over Seattle and dominated that game. They really didn't. You know, I mean, Stewart had that first play of the game. He busts a long one. Other than that, they averaged, you know, slightly over 2 yards a carry. And so they did not run the ball really, really well. And I think everyone sells out now to stop that run. And then on the other side, you know, you look at it and say, boy, the Cardinals didn't do a great job against the Packers run game. Well, Eddie Lacy had one run that was like 60 or 70 yards. Other than that, they bottled up their run game to about a 2 yards per carry average. So that's a key to me. I mean, if Carolina can bludgeon them to death, which they often do, they'll win this game. If they can't, then I think it's a coin flip.
You know, I had mentioned during that Superfan battle the great comeback by the Bills against the Houston Oilers, and how my son and I had both left the game last week at halftime, only to be surprised that the Seahawks came just so short. Do you think, you know, the comeback?
What's interesting about that game, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the Seahawks, I mean, to me, if that game goes 5 minutes longer on the clock, they win. It wasn't like Carolina put the clamps on them when it mattered most. It was just Seattle ran out of time.
So that was going to be, that's sort of where I'm going with that, too. Do you think that comeback was more, had more to do with the Seahawks turning it up, or with Carolina, like, letting it, you know, just saying, we got a big enough lead, we're good?
Probably both. I mean, if they play that game 100 times, I don't think that that first half would ever go as well as it did for Carolina, you know, in 99 other occurrences. I mean, Wilson played bad. You know, Stewart broke a run right off the bat, and that was it. You know, that was about as bad as Seattle can look, and that's about as good as Carolina could look. So I think, again, if you play that game 100 times, the first half never goes that lopsided. And I think when you go to halftime with that big a lead, you know, I think there's a natural letdown that we're in the locker room now. We're all happy. We're all thrilled. And, you know, I just think no matter what pep talk you get, there is a natural letdown there. And Seattle's, you know, one of the absolute mentally toughest teams in the league. You know, you knew they weren't going to just lay down, and they flat out just outplayed them in the second half.
James, what are you watching for in this one?
So the matchup in the between the Cardinals receivers and the Carolina secondary, as MDub mentioned, is going to be a great matchup. It's, you know, the Arizona Cardinals' strengths versus the Carolina weaknesses right there. I mean, thankfully, Carolina has Luke Kuechly, who, you know, he made a superhuman play, you know, last week taking out a corner route. You know, it's just a play that you don't typically see from a normal human being. I kind of wish this would be the Super Bowl matchup, because these are two coaches that your standard, you know, aren't your standard, oh, it's, you know, fourth and one in the at midfield, we're definitely going to punt. You know, Bruce Arians is known to take shots deep. He got criticized, you know, pretty heavily for throwing a pass against the Green Bay Packers last week, which would have just iced the game if they complete that pass. And, you know, he just doesn't care what the media thinks. So he's going to make that pass, you know, try and win the game right there. Riverboat Ron, a lot of people, you know, going back to our which coaches get fired and when they're going to get when they get evaluated. At the end of the 2012 season, Ron Rivera was finishing up his second season as the Carolina Panthers head coach. He was 1-13 in one score games, and they were talking about firing him. Since that moment, he's gone 16-3, and then they've had a tie in one score games. So he's definitely latched onto the whole expected points and how doing what the traditional pundits would say you should do in a situation isn't always the best thing to do. So I'm just looking for big plays by both Cam, Carson Ballmer, and then just crazy, or what would be considered crazy, coaching calls by Bruce Arians and Ron Rivera.
One more X's and O's question here for you, M-Dub, on this game. The Jared Allen, how big of a impact will not having him at 100% be for the Panthers defense?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. He's played very well since moving to Carolina. You know, he's much more of a fit in a 4-3, obviously. I think it was easy to say, boy, I mean, this guy's done. And he's not. You know, he's played very well for them. Their edge pass rush is just okay without him. I do think that's a big deal, because going back to that matchup, we know that Palmer and Arians are going to throw deep. They're going to take a lot of seven-step drops. They're going to need time in the pocket. And their line is okay. It's middle of the road, and their protection's middle of the road. You know, Palmer's not great at eluding pass rush either. So getting home and getting hits on him, I think, is huge. And without Allen, it'll be harder to do.
All right, who do you got, M-Dub? You mentioned the Panthers. You like it in a close game or a slightly larger game?
Yeah, I've got like 27-24 in that neighborhood. I'll get that with the home team winning.
James?
Yeah, I'm also going to take the Panthers. I mean, a lot of people forget they are 15-1, and, you know, Cardinals are 13-3. I mean, this is probably the two best teams remaining in the NFL. It's a shame one of them has to go home. But I think it's going to be a little bit closer than M-Dub, probably 24-21, 24-20.
You know, the second time you said that, James, it is not a shame. Every team should have to face the Patriots in the Super Bowl every year. It should be a mandatory edict at this point. I am going with the Panthers here. Slight home. I'm going with them. Home favorites. Number fire, by the way, -3 Carolina, only 50%. The interesting point about number fire's numbers, though, is Arizona +3, only 40.9%. Leaving an 8.1% of people, I guess, undecided on this game, which is pretty impossible if you're laying a bet. I would like to meet the 8.1% of people that are looking for a push on the number, which is also impossible to do. Okay. M-Dub, there were a bunch of hirings last week. Which one did you like the best? Which one had you scratching your head?
I get asked this every time, this time of year all the time. And it's a very difficult question to answer in terms of the Adam Gases of the world. I mean, the guys that have never been a head coach, that are excellent at their job as a coordinator. Yeah, he's a quarterback whisperer, but he's not going to spend 50 hours a week with Ryan Tannehill anymore. I mean, he's a head coach now. He's dealing with the media and all those other things. Does he have the skill set to lead a team, to be a CEO? And I'm not singling him out. I'm just talking about all the guys that are first-time head coaches. None of us know that.
Right.
I mean, a lot of these guys hit their head on the ceiling as, hey, he's a great X's and O's guy. He's a great teacher of football. Doesn't mean you're a good head coach. I do think he's a good hire. I mean, I know that he was sought after, and they're married to Tannehill, so I think that that's huge, that they need to get somebody to get him back on track. The other ones I'd mention is Ben McAdoo and I were GAs together at Pitt way back when, and so I'm happy for him. You know, I mean, and I think they were smart not to rock the boat in terms of installing yet another offense and making Eli, an old dog, you know, learn another new trick, you know, so... Will Ben be a great head coach? I don't know. But he's probably the hardest working guy I've ever been around in this business. And the last one I want to mention is the Lions. And, yeah, they didn't make a new hire. But sometimes the best moves are the ones you don't make. And it's kind of like I mentioned with McAdoo. Not that I love Caldwell, but I love their two coordinators. And those two coordinators did a terrific job, you know, especially after Cooter took over. With Stafford, you know, he got a lot out of Matthew Stafford that, you know, I thought it would have been a shame if they had to redo that entire coaching staff. So I think that was a great move that didn't happen.
M-Dub, where can people hear you? Where can they get in touch with you?
I'm all over the place right now. I'll be on Ross's podcast tomorrow. I'm writing previews for fanrag.com, and I'm at Williamson NFL. I'm pretty active there.
There you go. At Williamson NFL on Twitter. M-Dub, I know you got to get running. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely, bud. Take care. We'll talk soon.
All right, folks. We've got a whole bunch of great stuff coming to you in the next couple weeks. But James and I were talking offline before the show. And James, you had a quick question you wanted to run by us.
Yeah. I mean, you see all these teams going out and trying to hire the next hot coaching candidate. And probably the best example was this past week where Philadelphia went out and hired Doug Peterson, who at the time was an offensive coordinator for Kansas City. He already had to answer questions at his introductory press conference on why the Kansas City offense struggled so much against the New England Patriots. Monday Morning Quarterback put out a nice piece on what the whole interview process is for a head coach. It's basically, you know, a full day affair, as you might expect, to somebody you're about to pay millions of dollars and commit, you know, one of the 32 NFL franchises to. Should the NFL basically legislate that teams that are in the playoffs can't have, you know, their coordinators or their head coaches go out and interview for these other jobs? Because just to take one day out of their, you know, 6 or 7 days of preparation to go interview seems like it would put that team at a competitive disadvantage.
So I'm interested. Back in the day, that was the case. Teams that were in the playoffs weren't allowed to interview for other jobs. The problem was, is there were a bunch of very qualified candidates who were on playoff teams that were never able to get job openings, were never able to interview for job openings because their teams were involved in the playoffs. And until their team was out, they couldn't get hired, which led to, you know, some teams would sit and wait for the playoffs to be over, but a lot of other teams would go out and start hiring guys left and right, and they would get the whole process started because we know the scouting process is a long one. I wish M-Dub was actually still here because he described this really well when we brought this subject up on Football Today back in the day. But that process is super long. And so to get that head guy in charge, to get the whole process moving and get it started is important for a lot of teams. And teams that aren't in the playoffs do get a little bit of a jump start on getting prepared for next season. But they changed it so that these coordinators could get those jobs. Also, it eliminated the retreads. You know, there were certain coaches that were just continually to get hired, you know, over and over and over again. It was like, dude, this guy has failed at least three other places. Why is he still getting head coaching opportunities? And then, of course, the Rooney Rule was put in place to help minority coaches get more head coaching interviews. So all of these things have changed, I think, for the better. But you feel that maybe, I mean, maybe the answer is to put a hiring freeze during the playoffs. Like, no team can hire a new guy until the playoffs are done.
Well, I don't think that would necessarily solve the problem, because, as you said, you know, some teams like to get a jump start on things. And, you know, as MW has mentioned before, you know, you bring in a new guy and they're going to completely overhaul, you know, the scouting department. I believe it was when Marvin Lewis went to Cincinnati in the first place, they didn't have an advanced scouting department. And so it makes sense where a team eliminated from the playoffs would be able to go out and get a guy and then get basically a 1 month head start. And especially in the NFL, if you're having to redo a whole bunch of systems, I can see where that's a huge advantage. But if the NFL is concerned with transparency, with, you know, putting the best product on the field, you would think that they would want to somehow make sure that the teams that are in the playoffs are only focused on their teams. You see it also in college, where you have a coach that's like a lame duck bowl coach, because he's already interviewed at other places and has already, you know, maybe even taken a job somewhere else, and all he has left to do is either coach that bowl game, or sometimes the team that he's going to wants him to step in immediately, and he can't even coach the bowl game on the college level. And you know, as far as a fan experience and just the on-field product has to suffer, you would think.
You would think. I mean, honestly, if you have a good enough staff put in place with the right lieutenants in charge, you know, I think a coordinator going to interview for a head coaching position is something that a team should be able to overcome easily. And I don't think it necessarily took away anything from Doug Peterson's game plan against the Patriots. My guess is that, you know, they already had started, you know, some of the initial scouting on all the playoff teams. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure MW would back this up. All the teams that enter the playoffs will start some sort of initial scouting on all the other teams as they get prepared to face each team as the playoffs progress. But obviously putting in a more set game plan as the week of the game and the conclusion of the games to determine who your opponent is going to be is made fully aware. Anyway, it's an interesting dilemma. I mean, it's certainly a lot more difficult in college, where you have, you know, a group of kids who've been together for 4 years or some less. Some might be together for five, depending on how they redshirted. You know, trying to get to that, you know, that bowl game, and then that coach sort of jumps ship and can't coach that game, or sticks around to coach the game, but he's already left to go to another school. It's, you know, to me, it's a lot worse in college because of the relationship, the player coach relationship there, more so than in the NFL. But it was a good question. I'm glad you asked it. Speaking of asking questions, over the next 2 weeks, obviously, we're not going to do the show as we normally do. The plan is to sort of bring you as much content as we can involving the Super Bowl in any matter that we can. So I'm going to reach out to a few people, try and get some interviews with some people, talk to them about what they're looking forward to with the Super Bowl. I know James, I had already teased it earlier, is planning a special gambling episode of Next Fan Up. James, why don't you talk about what you're planning for that show?
Yeah, so typically when you walk into a Vegas casino or any other, establishment where you can place some wagers, the most intimidating thing to walk up to is either the craps table or the sports book. Just a lot of options, a lot of numbers, and typically people don't want to walk up and, you know, make a fool of themselves. So part of the show is just going to be covering, hey, I want to go and I want to, you know, put $20 on a game or $50 on a game. What's the protocol there? And then probably the best part and easily the best way to get people engaged in the Super Bowl, if you're having a Super Bowl party, is all the various prop bets. You know, you're going to hear about them everywhere. How long the
national anthem's going to last, all the way down to will a certain player catch a touchdown or go over a certain yardage total. So myself and a couple of the other super fans are going to highlight some of the fun prop bets out there, you know, take some sides on it and see where we go.
So that'll be a good one. If you want to hear us break down the Pro Bowl, you're going to have to send us a request. And to do that, it's going to either be by email, nextfanup@gmail.com, or on Twitter. Basically, this will be a Pro Bowl-free zone. And honestly, if you do ask for a Pro Bowl breakdown, I can tell you the very special guest will be my son, Zach Soderberg, because that's really all that the Pro Bowl appeals to at this point. It's 12-year-old kids who don't know any better. The game is meaningless, and half the people that are on the Pro Bowl roster aren't even going to be at the Pro Bowl because they don't care anymore. It's just the way that it is. It's too bad they can't do something like, you know, USA versus the world in the Pro Bowl. That would be great.
I'd watch that for a year, but lots of points, no defense, and horrible sideline interviews. There's your Pro Bowl preview.
Well done, James. So that's James. He's our Texan superfan. Thanks again to Ashley Williams of Her Fantasy Football. Check out her podcast on iTunes. It's also on Blog Talk Radio. It's great stuff. She does it with her two other sisters, all about fantasy football. So you're going to want to check it out. They were nominated for a Fantasy Trade Association Award or whatever it is, FSTA. I don't remember what it is. Unfortunately, the place I used to work won the award, not Her Fantasy Football. So I guess Matthew Berry can win awards without Nate Ravitz and myself. It's actually kind of sad. I'm just
like
kidding.
Grammys of podcast awards.
It's the people's choice. I'm just kidding. Congratulations to those guys over at the Fantasy Focus. I love Field Yates. I love Daniel Dopp. And of course, Matthew, you're my boy Blue. For James, for Ashley, for Drew Brooks, representing the Cardinals, for Patrick, representing the Patriots, and for Jimmy Six, representing the Panthers. Thanks again to M-Dub at Williamson NFL on Twitter. The best way to follow what he's been up to and what he will be up to. I am merely Pod Vader saying, there you have it. Jeff Fisher, what did we learn today?
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.